No,
So, yeah, we wanted to kind of put something together for today that was not just a sort of update on what we do or what happens on the boulevard, but something that was partly an update, but also maybe a way of talking about mission that might help all of us think about mission and what we're all doing for God in our own particular context. So it's a bit of a mishmash really of what we do and thinking about that and what God might be doing, and hopefully get a bit of an idea of where we might want to go with that, you know. As we were in the other room, and after having some sort of brief conversations at the start and knowing that kind of you were in a place of obviously moved from Swinemore to here, and this is in a fairly new space for you, you know, and in a way that's quite unsettling, you know. But I know there are thoughts of where you might want to go. That might be a bit blurred at the moment, but there's definitely a sense of this isn't the end here. You know, there might be something bigger. And I just kind of had this picture of a water wheel. And I don't know if you know that verse. I think it's Ezekiel 37, and it talks about the river of God coming from the throne and kind of flowing down. And it's the life, basically, you know, that God gives us. That's where we get our life. It's from God. It's that river of God that comes down from the throne. And that the water wheel is this kind of static thing. And then there's times in our lives where we're static. It doesn't move anywhere else, but it stays in one place, but it actually spins in its place and it picks up the water. So it's like this, the water wheel in a place where you are, that sense of, you know, wherever you are, the water wheel's still turning and it's picking up the river, it's picking up the life, it's picking up the water. And the importance of feeling that place where you are and still drawing up that water and seeing that as a really as an important moment as the moving somewhere else, you know, that this is a place where you just keep drawing from the river of life and you just keep taking it, even though you feel like you're static. Actually, the really important thing is to just keep drawing on that river and just seeing where it goes, you know. So anyway, I don't know if that helps. Help me. So yeah, we're part of the YFC team and been on Boulevard for just over 21 years now.
What does YFC stand for?
It used to stand for Youth for Christ, and we've been through some changes over the last 6 months, and now at the moment it stands for Youth, Faith and Community. It's a quite a big story that I can't go into now, but it is an important story. So I'm happy to chat to anybody, but I'm finding it really hard not to call it Youth for Christ, because it's just been such a part, you know, 21, 22 years of my life. So yeah, it's like it's been a move for us. But anyway, so YFC, if you want to think of it as Youth for Christ, please do. And yeah, I still will. So. yeah, but one of the, we may have read this verse out to you before, but it in a sense, it's, you know, like all scripture, it's just kind of never ending, you know, it doesn't lose its anything. and so there's a couple of verses from Isaiah 58 that are really important to us as a couple, because we had it read at our wedding. I think for YFC as well, it's been a really important bit of scripture for us over the years. It says 58, 11, this bit's 11 and 12, says, "The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings.
Stay
here.
Yeah. Okay. We can't keep bobbing up and down. So, what we that was a verse that we had at our wedding, but actually, nearly 21 years in, we can see real signs of that tangible rebuilding and repairing in the relationships that have been built in the breakfast club, in our schools work, in the youth and children's clubs, in our support for families, supporting people battling addictions, prostitutions, mental health support, and all the stuff that we do with the local church. So, you know, 21 years in, it all looks quite impressive in a way. It looks like we're quite professional. when we talk about our work, people say, oh, you know, you're so brave, I couldn't do that, because we talk about the area that we live in, and obviously it's got quite a lot of needs. Or that's a really wonderful thing you're doing, but you would have to be called, I think, to that kind of work. We thought maybe we would look at a couple of things to do with a couple of stories to do with courage and calling, and maybe at the end of it we'd fall off our pedestals.
Because
you can be encouraged, you know, by our inadequacy rather than by our shining brilliance. So the first story is about Breakfast Club, really, isn't it? And how it started.
Yeah, so, yeah. In probably 1998, so Breakfast Club started in 99, which you all know that now, obviously, having done past the quiz. So in 1998, Anna and me were at a conference in Swanwick, and one of the main speakers there who was a guy called Bob Holman, and Bob, yeah, he's written a number of books, and he's lived in very deprived communities around the country. He's passed away now, unfortunately, in his 80s. But so we'd heard about Bob, and he was living up in Easter House in Glasgow, which, very deprived, very rough, across Europe for one of the toughest places to live, basically. And him and his wife and children moved to Easter House. And Bob is super famous. He's was writing for regularly for The Guardian, and he'd written books and all these things. And yet here he was with his family just living on Easter House estate, you know. But he started a breakfast club, and we'd read about it in one of his books. And it was just in a front room somewhere, and he just had a handful of kids and, you know, played games and help them with their schoolwork and things like that. So it wasn't, in a sense, wasn't anything amazing, but it was as well. And so we'd gone to this conference, and me and Anna had been talking about, the breakfast club, starting a breakfast club, for the reason as I'd said in the other room about the, you know, community food and to share Jesus with people. And so we listened to Bob speaking, and then perhaps on the second morning we'd gone down for breakfast, and Bob was sat on his own at the table, and me and Anna were on another table, and we were chatting, and we were like, oh, should go and ask him about the breakfast club and things like this. And Anna's going, you go. So really nervous. He's such a humble guy, you know. But so went over to his table and sort of introduced myself, you know, and said to Bob, I said, oh, we've been thinking about starting this breakfast club. Just wondering if you've got any advice, you know, what kind of things do we need to do? And he just looked at me and said, just start it. I was like, okay. Oh, thanks, Bob. So I went back, sat at the table, and I was like, what did he say? He said, just start it. And that's what we did. And it was just the right thing to say, basically. And I guess that's the bit about courage, really. You know, just got to go for it. And, you know, we started with, I was thinking about it the other day, I was thinking, I wish I could be transported back just to that first morning when it started, and that feeling of sort of excitement and trepidation in case nobody turned up or whatever. We didn't know what was going to happen, you know. But we had 8 children on that first morning. And it'd been quite tough starting as well, because there was quite a lot of opposition, just for various reasons, church politics stuff. might have heard of it. So it was quite difficult actually getting it to that first day of opening. You know, it was a big battle actually, and it nearly didn't happen on a couple of occasions, but it did happen, and the 8 children came, and then and some parents came, and it grew, and then, you know, we had this big cooked breakfast at some point, and I had 120 people to it, the police, the teachers came, and it got huge, you know. And then so it's been through various phases, but at the moment we've probably got 10, 12, 15 children, maybe 6 or 8 parents. So at the moment it's really quiet, but having been doing it for 20 years, I know that that's how it goes. But it's really nice actually to have that time with the kids, because some, you know, if there's like 50 kids there where there had been in the past, you're just kind of policing it, and it's great because they're getting fed and there's community there and everything. But at the moment it's really nice because we can all sit with the children and play games, help them with the homework and chat with their parents, and there's so many needs there within that small group. We kind of need that time at the moment, and
I'm going to cut you off now because we'll be here all day.
This station was the boss.
So we haven't got long apparently, but I wanted to. I don't. Have you seen the film We Bought a Zoo?
Yeah,
yeah. It's sort of based on a true story, that American advice, but about a guy who kind of bought a zoo. And there's a quote in it from the guy who did it. He says, "You know, sometimes all you need is 20 seconds of insane courage, just literally 20 seconds." Of just embarrassing bravery, and I promise you something great will come of it. And I think for a lot of the things we've done, it's been, you know, based on about 20 seconds. So what we'd like you to do is to think for a minute, do you have a kind of mustard seed idea that you've not had the insane courage to act on? And it might be something that you didn't think it was even a thing that you should act on. You just thought, that would be really good if that happened in Beverly, or, you know, if someone did that in their house or whatever. It doesn't have to be your own idea. It might be something you saw somewhere else, or it might be an idea that you had, but you just know it's totally illogical and you would never have the means for it. It doesn't matter, really. We want you to say it out loud to the person next to you, whatever, you've got a minute. Say what the idea is, and maybe say what the fears are that stops you. Is it, you know, money, not being the professional person, whatever it is, and it could be literally anything mad or fanciful, and nobody's going to write it down and hold you to it, so don't worry. But go for it. 1 minute.
Good question.
So let's go to the next one. Okay, I'm going to stop you in about 30 seconds. Okay, have we got maybe three people brave enough to say their insane idea out loud? Okay. Do you want to say it?
It's something called compassionate communities, which is training and supporting volunteers to be with people at end of life, and then supporting people through bereavement and training different areas of community that they might fit into about bereavement and support, and right, then stepping back. But it's a possible potential for the future, so it's not that insane. Although maybe it feels like
but
that.
There'll always be a market for it. Yeah. Well, great.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Don't have to. It's not actually school.
I do have
don't
to.
Don't make me
come
be
on.
The only one. Yeah. I'd like to start a pop-up cafe and music venue for 14 to 17-year-olds in the centre of Beverley.
Nice.
And resourced by young people for young people, yeah, with a space that is safe for them to be creative particularly.
Yeah. And why that particular age group, or did it?
Because that's the, as Ian so eloquently put it, some of them are too old for certain things and too young
for other
things, and there's a vacuum, particularly for boys as well.
We'll be waiting for the first
you can
CD,
buy,
download, whatever it is going to be. Cool. Okay, so that was about calling, basically. You know, call to go and do what? No, it wasn't. It was about courage. This next one's about calling.
Could be both.
Could be both, yeah. So the second story that we wanted to talk about was about aughts and how that started. I don't know if all of you or any of you might have heard about aughts. I think I've talked about it before, but it's basically a sort of safe space, sewing space for women, and it came out of a conversation that I support women who, some quite a few women who are involved in street prostitution, and one of the women I was supporting who we'd invited home, and she was going to come and see Kavita dance in something, and she was completely I just did it because we thought it was normal. She was completely bowled over by this, and she said to me, I don't have any friends who aren't connected to either the drugs or the prostitution. I just don't have any friends who, I've never had a normal friend. And I thought, well, this is just ridiculous, this is not right. And that really, it killed me, just her saying that. I thought, well, something's got to be done. And then I also came across this quote. Well, on the subject of calling, I'd say the question is always like, do we have to be specially called to something? Or, as the phrase goes, some people say the need is the call. You know, if there's a need out there, then that's your call, that you don't have to wait around for like a clear word from God. But then there are so many needs, and are we called to meet all of them? How do we kind of work this thing out? And then I came across this quote by this old guy called Frederick Buchner, and it says, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." And it was like a ping moment. I had never really considered calling, my calling, even though I'd been a, you know, missionary for 600 years by then. I hadn't always felt like it. I hadn't considered my calling in terms of it being anything I enjoy. You know, that my whether it brought me deep gladness or not was not meant to be part of it. I was meant to put, you know, myself aside in order to serve. And I was like, what's all this about my deep gladness? You know, so it got me thinking about what is my deep gladness? What do I get joy from? And there are lots of things. Obviously, chocolate is on the list. But on a slightly deeper level, it was people and connecting and stories, but also creativity and creating things together. So I am not a good sewer, but I somehow manage to still like sewing. And I'm usually interested in something for 5 minutes and then I move on to the next thing. But with sewing, I still seem to like it. So I felt like that was a kind of joyful, deep gladness, a thing I could do, not very well. And I felt deeply the hunger of this woman and what she was saying about friendships. And that's how Orts began. So we created, it started off, it didn't start like that. I didn't have the courage of my convictions at all, and I thought I should, you know, talk to people who did know and do it properly, and I tried to, you know, start well and do my research and talk to people who had much more experience of working, supporting women involved in street prostitution, and talk to people involved in setting up, you know, so creative social projects and all that. And everyone I talked to kind of just dismissed me out of hand and said, oh no, it's terribly naive and you need to be, you've got to have proper trained counsellors and you've got to be able to do this and you've got to do that and you've got to think about this and that. And I just got more and more knockbacks. I was like, oh my days, but I couldn't, God's little itch just wouldn't let me go. And in the end, I thought, I'm not trying to start a thing. I don't want to do a project. I just want to do this. You know, it just needs to happen. So we started actually in our dining room, and then now very quickly we moved into a former pharmacy space in the parish hall, and now it looks like a beautiful thing. There's gorgeous material everywhere, and there's women come, and which, you know, we need to expand because we're tight of space and all this stuff.
And it was funny in the dining room.
Don't get sidetracked, because we've already bagged on too long. But I think when I was asking all these people for advice, I think I was actually asking for permission, you know, and then I wasn't getting permission. And in the end, yeah, I realised that, yeah, the permission was from God. It wasn't permission that I needed. So anyway, all of that to say, on the place God calls you to is a place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. You know Beverly well enough and the needs that, you know, you see around. The deep hunger, shall we say, in your particular community. I'm just imagining you're all from Beverly or whichever bit that you come from. So maybe spend a minute with these questions. What is your deep joy, your deep gladness? What do you love to do? It could be fixing bikes, hairstyling, gardening, things I haven't thought about. I've got to think fast enough.
Other things.
Just spend a minute quietly on your own thinking about that. And maybe from that, maybe not, because we don't have to tell how it might meet a need. Is there a need that just pops in your head and you think, actually, you know, being a hairdresser might meet somebody's loneliness, I can chat, or whatever it is. So have a minute in quiet and then you can share it with your neighbour.
Thank you.
Okay. You may not have had a deep thought, but share what you had with your neighbour.
And if you go out the side, it's beautiful. If you go over the bridge, down the side, that's what I
Okay, if I could just draw you back from your deep joy. Just wanted to finish with a story. I don't need my glasses all a bit tight. So I don't know if anyone's ever seen the film Ice Cold in Alex, 1958. I grew up with that film. You know, I remember watching it probably in the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and then they're still showing it. I just love it. Some of you might remember seeing it in the 60s as well. But anyway, yeah, so it's about, if you don't know, it's about this ambulance crew. I won't tell you all the details because you might want to watch it sometime and I don't want to spoil it. You know. And they're basically going across the desert in the Second World War. Their aim is to get to Alexandra. And when they get there, they're going to have this ice cold beer. But there's a part in the film where they come across this massive sand dune, and they can't go around it for some reason, I don't know why, but anyway, in the film, they can't get around it, they have to go over this massive sand dune. And they come up with this plan. Basically what they do is they reverse it to the bottom of the sand dune, and they put it into reverse, they take the spark plugs out to get rid of the compression on the engine, and they put the starting handle into the engine, and so they wind it basically, and as they turn the starting handle, the engine turns over. Because it's in gear, it moves the axle, it moves the wheels just sort of inch at a time. Every time they turn it, it moves another inch, and because it's going so slow, they manage to get it up the sand dune, and they're almost at the top at one point. And somebody's hanging on to the handle, and then they go, it's like super hot, everyone's dripping in black and white sweat, you know. And, they go to sort of mop their brow, and because they hadn't put the handbrake on, they let go of the handle, and the ambulance goes all the way back down to the bottom, and they're all kind of in this moment, like, just, now what, you know. But after a few minutes, they kind of gather themselves, and they go back down, and they start again, and they go through this whole process of taking it in turns to turn the handle, and they get to the top eventually, and they can get going on their way to Alexandra. So, but the point of the story is not about the ice cold beer, but it's about working with what you've got and using everything that's there. You know, what has God given you to use? What has he given you that you can use? There are things that you have already within you, or within the body of you, that you can use. And once you've found that, you work out then how to use it. So like the starting handle was key, taking the spark plug. There's all these little things that they kind of worked out as a little team together to get that truck to the top of the hill. So it's kind of recognizing what you've got and using that. And then I think the other main thing for me watching that, which just really inspires me, is that it's not just about giving up, but it's the kind of when you feel like you're doing something and you get a bit of a knockback, and then you decide, okay, let's do this, let's go again, let's not give up, let's go again. So it's kind of using what you've got, what are the resources that God has given you, and if you get a knockback, just go again, and that kind of pulling together as a team and sort of supporting each other. And you know, the person that let the handle go was in big trouble, and there was that moment where they were all like, "God, it's okay, you know, we're in this together." And then they went again, and they achieved what they needed to achieve. So, yeah. So I don't know if we've got time for questions, or is it? Yeah.
I mean, it would be good to spend time praying for these guys. Also, perhaps praying about some of the things that we've been thinking and talking about ourselves. But yeah, has anybody got any questions? Anybody kind of want to pick up on anything we've been thinking?
What happened
about
in the dining room, Chris?
Happens in the dining room.
It's just really funny because the women that work on the street, the real characters, you know, and they're very much a part of our family, but it's our dining room's not massive, and their lives are so chaotic that all got the machines going and trying to not really the things that get made are, you know, it's quite funny. So it's just, yeah.
There's two versions of what went on. No, really,
it's just seeing this chaoticness and this endeavour to make things. And I just remember that, thinking, what are they making? What is that? It's quite funny, but it's the... It's the bonding together. I sometimes pop into Orts, and it's just such a because it's this the other space now that isn't in our house, but and it was beautiful at our house as well. You know, knowing the lives of these the women, and you know that, you know, we've taken some of their children on camp and things. So we know them really well, but there's so much pain there, so. It's so lovely to see them enjoying themselves, you know, in the Ort space. When you go in, you know, there might be 10, 15 women in there, and it's such a beautiful thing, you know, that just feels that support and that love and making things.
We'll move on. Any other kind of questions or comments?
Yeah, Emily.
after all this time, you know, it's been called Halt of Christ, use of Christ, mm-hmm. why take Christ out there?
Well, the issue for us has been that we haven't rechartered with National Youth for Christ. We've always been an autonomous charity, well, since the early 90s, but we've been linked with National Youth for Christ. But their, I could say, new remit is to only work with young people. So they were, and obviously we work with children. Youth is very much our main focus, but young people, adults, elder, everybody, basically, it's a community thing. Nice. And they're very much focused now just on youth. And so we try to, we talked about diversity with them for a lot of years, trying to work it out.
And the volunteering.
Yeah, there was some issues with volunteering, which we struggled with, because a lot of the mums volunteer for us, you know, like serving cereals at Breakfast Club. And which is great for us. For us, it's a journey for them to Jesus, you know. But National had one of the lines was that you had to be a Christian to be a volunteer, and it just wasn't workable for us because that's it's a much bigger story than that.
So we have not taken Christ out of our but we're not allowed to use. It's sort of like being a franchise. I mean, you're not allowed to be called a Youth for Christ centre unless you're a Youth for Christ centre with National Youth for Christ. So,
and we are. There's 70 odd centres across the country, and I think we were one of two that worked in the inner city. Most of the centres work sort of a bit more suburban or rural. So, we were always kind of on the edge anyway, but. Yeah,
one more question. Pete?
Yeah, well, just actually, you've been at it now for 21 years. Are you getting to the stage where you're going to have your own life and step out? If you did, this is what really interests me, if you did, do you think that now the organisation you have created is so strong that you could, it would continue? Have you someone else who can step in where you started? Or is it solely based on your contribution? And if you stepped aside, would it collapse?
Yeah, no, I mean, actually, Hope Youth for Christ was started in 1951. So one of probably the second oldest centre in the whole of Great Britain. So it has a very long history. And it was in, I think, 87 was the first paid worker. And then we came 10 years later in 97. So it was all it was very well established before we arrived, but the bit where we live on the boulevard really begun in probably 93. It used to be very citywide doing events and things, and then moved into the community and into a guy called Richard Bromley's house in 93, and then we moved in 97. So it was all already very well established, and it has a, you know, management committee, is a very good structure to it that actually doesn't need us.
But also, was it 2 years ago? So Chris was the team leader for Hull YFC.
Youth for Christ,
YFC, whatever. but something like two years ago, he stepped aside and Rich Newby, who was part of the team, is now the team leader, and we're just minions, really. so that kind of is already in process, stepping aside, and, you know, things work anyway, and, you know, we don't go to...
So it has a future, then?
Yes.
And,
yeah, thank you. It's all dependent on that.
Will it progress by diversifying and doing other things, or will it just concentrate on the area that it's working on at the moment?
The vision was always to be in the most deprived parts of the city, and at the time in 93 when the team moved in, the boulevard was the most deprived, and over the sort of 25 years or so is, you know, North Hull Orchard Park has statistically been more deprived, and Greatfield was more deprived at some point. But I think we're, yeah, so there are other bits of the city. So the dream really would be to put a team in each of those areas. But and we did a bit on Greatfield. We had someone in Orchard Park for a while when I first came here. Greatfield, we had a couple living there. But financially, it's really hard to sustain that.
And also energy wise, I think it was a lot after.
Yeah.
You know, to be embedded in one place and also be able to really look after people embedded in another place.
Are we the only people who support you, or are we the only source of money? You get grants from Hull City Council, or what? No, where do you get funds?
Generally it's individuals. But there's quite a number of churches that give gifts every year. It's quite a big support base, actually.
It's mostly individuals. The mainstay of the funding is individuals and churches, some churches.
Yeah.
And that actually has provided us with a much more stable funding source than most other kind of organisations in this kind of sector, because it's not dependent on grant funding. We do get grants for certain things, you know, on and off, but our work isn't dependent on that money. It doesn't fall flat if that money got pulled, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the turnover is anything between 70,000 and 90,000 a year, and that money always comes in.
We don't have anything from the council.
No, very few trusts. It's a small trust fund, but generally it's individuals and churches that support us. Yeah.
It would be really good to spend some time praying for these people. I know if a couple of people want to come up and pray, but just people from the floor as well. Let's pray.